Disclaimer. The following broadcast gives a true and honest account of the events described, and all evidence and details herein are solely factual. What you are about to hear is real and may disturb you. Caution is strongly advised. Welcome to Dead Souls Social Club.
Guns. A Dead Souls Social Club manifesto. Okay, so here's how it goes down. It starts with a shooting, a normal school day, lunchtime, or just after classes end. A single scream, then repeated popping, AR-15 or Tech-9. The gunmen, or men, are always young, never middle-aged or older. Young men, often just teenage boys. The Columbine shooters were just 17 and 18, Adam Lanza was 20, and Nicholas Cruz, who killed 17 at Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, was just 19 when he opened fire. The initial break-in TV news reports come in with little to no information, other than there has been an incident in a school. Truth is, no one knows what the hell is going on, not even the authorities at this point. The news are trying to squeeze any information from locals and the police. They've scraped together some info on the school from Wikipedia. If we're lucky, we get the still image from the website too. Local reporters rush to the scene to try and gather their 5 minutes of fame on a national news network. The ticker at the bottom of the TV screen reveals that the incident is genuine and not a false alarm. There are casualties, possibly fatalities, but the news doesn't know anything more right now, but they are trying their hardest to make it sound horrific. There's a helicopter shot on the news. It's flying above the school and you can see the scenes of police and other authorities surrounding the building, but no one is going inside. There are lots of lights flashing, but it's always daylight. School kids running out with their hands over their head in single file. The first video from inside the school emerges. It's from a mobile phone, shared via social media, usually from the students, occasionally from the killer. It shows people running, screaming, and little else. You can hear loud bangs of gunfire popping in the background. The camera flickers. As many as 10 or 20 dead or injured, the news reports, with news just in. It's always worst case scenario. A reporter manages to get an interview with a senior detective on the scene. He tells us nothing we can't work out or assume correctly for ourselves. He's in a state of shock too. He just has to use police jargon and look like a serious cop. That's all we expect from him at this point. The gunman is identified incorrectly by reporters. Maybe they get the name from local folks who have assumed it was the town outsider, a weirdo. The real gunman is identified shortly after, following reliable info leaked from the police. An anonymous source, they say. Yeah, it's the police. The news very briefly apologizes for identifying the wrong suspect, but not after dropping their name and dragging it through the mud on national, if not international, news networks first. In comes the trusty yearbook photo of the gunman. He's likely a current or ex-pupil of the school that's being shot up. Faculty and locals reveal that he was a loner or had few friends. They soon reveal that he had mental health issues, or so they thought. The yearbook photo shows that the gunman is an average teenager who looks harmless and like everyone else. Don't worry though, shortly the news will uncover a picture of the killer holding a gun or standing in front of far-right regalia, anything that can demonize the son of a bitch. Wait, we finally have an interview with someone who knows the gunman. It's a neighbor or distant family member. They tell us the shooter has always been obsessed by guns and questionable right-wing ideologies. He might have been expelled from the school, but his parents never thought there was anything abnormal about him. They never feared him. He probably doesn't have a criminal record, or, if he does, it's for some low-level misdemeanor, nothing that rings those alarm bells. By now, this is the only news story that the news networks are covering. Reporters may cut to an interview with a psychology expert in the studio, who reveals nothing important or that we can't work out ourselves. The news will talk about Columbine a hell of a lot though, and almost certainly compare this incident to that one. It's the benchmark after all. An expert on something or another will be interviewed. He or she will talk about America's famous culture of violence, as if that alone is a reasonable yet sad excuse for the events unfolding. The tone will lean towards one of, oh well, this is just the way things are. Reporters finally get an interview with an eyewitness or a group of them, always still in shock, crying and inarticulate. A student who witnessed a murder directly. The witness uses phrases like, they heard popping sounds and he came out of nowhere. The reporter, in a display of his actual IQ, will ask how they felt at the time of the shooting. No one has talked about the victims as of yet. To fill time, the news will talk about previous school shootings: Columbine, Parkland, Sandy Hook, Virginia Tech, Red Lake High School, Santa Monica College, and the University of Texas. The source material is rich and plenty. Columbine remains the benchmark, though. They list off some of the worst killers in some kind of twisted top killers charts rundown. They talk a lot about Dylan Klebold and Eric Harris, further cementing their death wishes. They'll almost certainly touch on James Holmes and the Aurora movie theater shooting in 2012. They got to include him because he just looks batshit crazy, and it's great for viewing figures and ratings. Insert pic of him mimicking the Joker, for example. Another family member, this time a closer relative, will reveal that they never thought that they could do such a thing, like what's happening right now. Police will leak to the press if the shooter has been killed or not, or arrested or escaped. Even if he escapes, police will have apprehended him by now. They confirm the exact number of dead and injured, which remains on the news ticker for over 24 hours. An official spokesperson from the NRA makes a formal statement that they have in fact no formal comment or statement to make in regards to the event. No one pro-gun is interviewed just yet. The president, senior politicians, and public figures all send their thoughts and prayers, which are relayed by the news. The president will also announce that he will look at a national dialogue on gun control, which will amount to very little. There's lots of talk about semi-automatic weapons, bump stocks, and people with mental health issues obtaining firearms. Gun show loopholes need to be addressed, they say. The news manages to get a video interview with Cameron Caskey or David Hogg, who talk about gun reform. The NRA releases a further statement contradicting its earlier one, whereby they announce that they are dead against any changes in existing gun laws. In their official statement, they blame the shooters and America's culture of violence. They also single out the failure of mental health professionals to ID potentially dangerous persons. They will probably hold a pro-gun rally nearby the location of the shooting in the coming weeks, and a coincidence of booking, of course. Reporters will ask people in interviews if teachers should be armed. Over the following days, footage of victims' funerals will play on news networks, and the president will visit the location of the massacre. He will make a speech about tightening America's gun laws. But by now, pro-gun commentators have reached the air and are quoting the Second Amendment and insinuating that school shootings are just something we have to expect in the 21st century, even though it's only a national issue, rarely international. There will be revelations about the killer's mental state, and a manifesto, diary, or website or blog that he left behind detailing who his hatred is against and outlining his plan to kill. No one will know the names of the dead. That's not important to the news networks. I'm saying he, him, as the shooter, as it will almost never be female. In a few weeks, this will happen all over again in exactly the same way. Rinse and repeat. Thoughts and prayers. Home of the brave. I often enter the debate online in regards to the gun control question. I find that older generations will often state that this is a new phenomenon, and that it never happened when they were younger. This statement, of course, is factually incorrect. The first school shooting was in 1840, and they have occurred regularly ever since. The advent of 24-hour news media in the 1980s has just meant that these events seem more regular and common, however. Initially in the 1990s and early 2000s, the discussion of news programming and talk shows laid blame for these massacres firmly at the hands of violent movies, video games, and heavy music. Marilyn Manson had a lot of shit. These reasonings, though, were relics of the infamous Satanic Panic and were baseless in their assumptions. Data and research supported this. These days, however, the media lay the blame solely at the feet of mental health issues. While that may be the case for some incidents, no one likes to address the reality that some of the shootings may be motiveless or hero worship for school shooters that come before. These reasons are far more chilling to accept, mainly because authorities are powerless to do anything about that, let alone prevent it. It's far better to blame something or something. It gives some twisted comfort, or at least a feeling of understanding. But do you remember high school? I sure do. I think it's safe to say that there are a number of experiences that people have in high school, and even if they didn't directly experience them firsthand, most will certainly witness the unpleasant truths of violence, bullying, and humiliation. For many, high school sucked. I tend to regard people who remember it as the best 4 years of their lives with caution and a degree of skepticism. For a lot of kids, it's a time of doubt, stress, and painful self-consciousness and unhappiness. They are actually the lucky ones. For the bullied underclass, the wimps, the shrimps, and the girls who are routinely referred to as skags, tramps, or whores, it's 4 years of misery and two different kinds of hate. The kind that you feel deep down for yourself, and the kind that you feel for the assholes who punch you in the halls, who pull down your shorts in gym class and pick out some charming nickname for you like Gay Boy, Four Eyes, or Fat Ass, names that stick to you like Gorilla Glue. These experiences, mixed with access to guns, is a volatile combination that few seem to talk about or consider as a response to school shootings. It's much simpler to outlaw something like violence on TV before 9 p.m. or stop the sale of the latest Chucky movie, but to change a whole culture and social structure is something bigger than you or I could likely comprehend. But that's exactly what it would take, a cultural reset. Do these high school experiences happen elsewhere in the world? Of course, in almost every advanced country. In that case, is the issue easily remedied by limiting access to guns by teens? After all, that's a problem that's almost uniquely American, right? Well, sort of, but not entirely either. Now, I'm not here to preach about gun control or question the United States' choice to allow gun ownership and their Second Amendment rights. Far from it. That's the choice of the American people, and I respect that. Plus, I'm sure David Miles Hogg or Cameron Caskey can speak far more articulately and eloquently regarding these subjects anyway. I'm just here to look at the reasons for why school shootings happen, the causes that lead to the phenomenon, and to discuss it without an agenda or political bias. I guess that maybe because I'm a frequent visitor to the United States and not necessarily a permanent resident, means that I can look at the country's social issues without the burden of politics or social baggage weighing me down. The old adage that to resolve or understand a problem is always easier from the outside looking in than to be stood in the center of the issue is an axiom for very good reason. The current state of public political discourse in the United States has descended in recent years into a state of disarray, to say the very least. Center politics has been abandoned, with the average Joe being fiercely liberal or dedicated right conservative. Red or blue, my friends. Whilst that may pose a fairly simplistic view of things, both you and I know that most, if not the vast majority, of current cultural issues can't simply be lumped and explained in one of two boxes. 28 souls died in the massacre at Sandy Hook Elementary School, while there were more than 750 homicides in Chicago in 2020. There were over 7,000 American troops killed in Afghanistan by the end of 2019. American troops volunteer to go into harm's way. They are fully aware of the risk. Their bodies will return home to parades and their coffins will be draped in the stars and stripes. But the Chicago murdered had slightly over 250 dead children amongst them, some just waiting to get on a school bus, some just shopping at the store, and others actually in school learning. But they don't get the hero treatment, even though they are just as dead. Gun control would do little to change these situations because the guns are already out there, right? According to a May 2021 report by data analysis organization Statista, 83% of guns in the United States that are used in mass shootings and school shootings are actually legally obtained and owned. In 2012, Californians bought 750,000 rifles and handguns. A state with around 70% liberal or independent-leaning individuals and gun control advocates. So what does all this mean? Well, certainly the image of the gun-toting Republican being the cause at the root of the problem isn't that black and white. I guess what I'm saying is that the data and research suggests the cause of mass or school shootings problem is a cultural problem. It's not political. It's not caused by the Second Amendment being outdated, it's not the result of video games, and it's not caused by heavy rock music, and it's certainly not the fault of violence in movies. One of my favorite lines from a Hollywood movie written in 1996 by Kevin Williamson is, "Movies don't create psychos. Movies make psychos more creative." I have to say, I agree 100% with this take. led by Professor of Psychology Edward Gagan, an Alfred University research paper dated in August 2001 gives evidence to the five main causes of school shootings in the United States. They are, firstly, the individual wants to get back at those who hurt them. It's a revenge motive. Two, they are bullied throughout childhood. Three, they don't value life due to psychological influence from their childhood. Four, they've been the victim of psychological and physical abuse from family members. Five, they have one or more mental health problems. These causes are derived from research into the shooters, their family members, and their close peers. An update to the investigation in 2012 provided the same answers and outcome, and in 2017, I personally took part in a co-research project partnered with a UK university that arrived again at the same exact investigative outcome. Given the data, answers, and facts that have been in the public domain for more than two decades, why hasn't positive affirmative action been taken to address an issue that is becoming so commonplace that many incidents of school shootings don't even make the news anymore? Well, whilst the answer may be fairly simple, the resolution is not. I'm not pro-gun ownership. I think a gun has a sole purpose, and that is to kill. Man or beast, a gun is a weapon of destruction and has no positive purpose in society. With that said, I also think the recall and removal of all firearms in circulation is now almost an impossibility. Further, there is evidence to show that in a society of little to no guns, but with the cultural issues similar to the United States, such as the United Kingdom, for example, then where access to guns is vastly reduced, then other options will replace the void that guns fill in the United States, such as knife violence, for example. Social commentators often refer to America's so-called culture of violence and how it plays a significant role in kid-on-kid school shootings. That this idea has gained even a shred of acceptance simply proves what George Orwell categorically knew when he wrote 1984. If you say something often enough, it will be accepted as the truth. But I'll be frank. America as a nation is no more violent than any other nation. Yes, America has a history of wars and aggression, just like every other country and culture. Look at Germany in the 1930s and 40s. Look at the 300-year savage British Empire. Consider the French Revolution, the Russian Revolution even, South America's War of the Triple Alliance, the Japanese atrocities during World War II, the fact Australia was founded by banished prisoners, and China's Taiping Rebellion. Often you hear that Americans are a nation of hunters. This may be true, but no more so than Russia, Canada, and Northern European countries. Princeton professor Eddie Gowdy stated in August 2019 to a reporter on MSNBC, "America is not unique in its sins as a country. We are not unique in our evils, to be honest with you. I think where we may be singular is our refusal to acknowledge them, and the legends and myths we tell about our inherent goodness to hide and cover and conceal so we can maintain a kind of willful ignorance that protects our innocence." When a mass shooting occurs, most politicians stick to a discussion of symptoms only, a thin veil over the real and true wound. Politics should be the conduit for our most expanded convention about societal issues, not the most superficial one. Conventional politics does not lend itself to a discussion of the deeper issues that plague us, but it's a necessity. America does not just have a gun crisis, it suffers from a cultural crisis. America will not stop experiencing the effects of gun violence until they are ready to face the many ways that their culture is riddled with violence. American environmental policies are violent towards the earth. The criminal justice system is violent towards people of color, as is law enforcement, demonstrated by last year's George Floyd-inspired BLM movement, which wasn't the first incident of its ilk. The trickle-down economic system is violent towards the poor. U.S. foreign policy and military action is violent in ways and places where it doesn't have to be. The news media is violent in its knee-jerk sharing and blaming for the sake of a better click rate. The people's hearts are violent as they abandon each other constantly, with a divorce rate hovering at around 50%. The United States is third only behind Russia and Belarus for highest divorce rates in the world, silently breeding desperation and insanity. The US federal government, the government of the people, is indirectly and directly violent in the countless ways it uses its power to help those who do not need help and to withhold support from those that do. From a young age, Americans are taught to be the best, be number one, go big or go home. But what happens for those in society that can't be the best? What happens to those who struggle and fail? Pressure to earn big money, get a career, a partner, a big house, make sure you mow that lawn to perfection. Pressure for the latest car, the latest phone, 2 holidays a year, the clothes, the lifestyle, conform, conform, conform. If you put a foot wrong, you'll stand out, they'll talk, they'll gossip. Self-indulgence, selfishness, destruction of community, peer pressure, and desensitization. The pressure to conform with others' expectations and beliefs can compel us to customize our integrity and behave dishonestly. It can descend further into self-isolation, psychological breakdown, anger, hatred, and fester in darkness. The darker truth that Americans must now face is that society is not just steeped in violence, but that it is hooked on violence. And in area after area, there are those who make billions of dollars on deepening that hook. It's not a conscious action or presented decision. But until that is confronted, violence will simply grow along with our acceptance. Though gun safety legislation should not be dismissed, a political establishment so steeped in the ways of brute force is understandably not equipped to be the purveyor of a solution to the problem of violence in the United States. Maybe those in power know this and have known it for a long time. Maybe the NRA dollar is stronger than our moral compass. Understandable in a flag-waving capitalist culture. Understandable but not acceptable. With a $705 billion military budget, but only a $58 billion federal stipend for the State Department, the US commitment to brute force, an ever-withering commitment to soul force, is apparent and depressing. Is it amusing to hear that the United States Air Force are seeking a further 100 stealth B-21 Raiders with a tag price of $550 million and each equipped to carry both nuclear and conventional weapons, while over 12.5 million children in the United States live in food insecure homes below the breadline? This will increase due to the COVID pandemic in 2021. The idea of politicians who allow this to happen being the ones who are going to save us from the epidemic of violence in America is tragically laughable. Does this sound preachy? I mean, sure it does. But I'm not pushing an agenda. I'm just communicating the data, the evidence, and the facts. These are all facts. They are there for you to find and read for yourself. Don't take my word for it. The solution to our societal sickness is not a conspiracy, nor is it a mystery. Nothing is going to fundamentally change until enough of us are willing to take a stand for fundamental culture change. And no change could be more fundamental than for the United States to transform from a culture of violence to a culture of peace. From the frequency of attack to the frequency of forgiveness. From a land of fear to a land of love. Statistically, around 107 people will die of gunshot wounds today and every day. You won't have to wait long for the next school shooting either. They happen around once every week. You'll only hear about the bad ones though, and I say that as if all aren't bad. In quick summation, researchers show remarkable agreement with law and psychology professionals, and also many social commentators. All have opined about this serious national issue. They agree about the revenge motive. Bullying and mistreatment create a simmering situation in those ridiculed and victimized, and in some cases the hurt, shame and anger of this victimization boils over into the taking of lives, where an individual reaches their metaphorical limit line and sees no other option. A sense of aloneness, alienation and powerlessness set the stage for dramatic repercussions. The interpersonal climates of our schools themselves contribute to the tragedies that they fear so much. We as a society need to be aware that we cannot just pass off the verbal, physical, and emotional hostility that students visit upon each other as just children being children. Some of those children, on the contrary, will come to a point where they see their only course of action as behaving like the worst of the adults in our society, with murderous violence. Nature versus nurture. And speaking of abuse, the emergence of witnessing and of being the target of domestic violence as a cause has shown and been proven to be a contributing factor in 61% of decisions to carry out a school shooting. This should place even more importance on this already identified destructive disease that we face in our society. We already know that victims and witnesses of domestic violence are at risk of becoming perpetrators themselves as adults. This is not new psychological science. There are some who have learnt that violence towards others is a way to solve problems. When a student like this needs a solution badly, they will hurt others as they have been hurt. Indeed, this is the same psychological construct that is also apparent in many cases of serial killings too. While school shootings are of course much more likely when the means of lethal violence are readily available, eradicating this element alone will not resolve the issue completely. Of course it won't, intent is 50% of the issue, but a willingness to openly discuss constructively regarding gun control would absolutely create an inroad for improvement on the situation. For something as powerful as a firearm, something that can end and destroy lives in a split second, there should be no legitimate reason for not having strict and tight legislation to control access to them. That will of course not infringe on anyone's rights, but merely provide a safe structure for their allowance into a free society. A fanatical gun nut might take umbrage to any further control over their firearms, but if they obtain their weapons legally and have honest and lawful intent in regards to their use, then surely the impact on them will be minimal, if any, in regards to gun control measures being tightened. I think the key is education. Use of a firearm, particularly against another person, is not a light decision, so information and education is paramount to its fair and lawful use. More so, and ultimately one of the most important factors, is the root cause of why someone would want to use a firearm in the first place against another human being, which brings us full circle to cultural and societal impact. While we can be content in the knowledge that schools are essentially safe, we must worry at what seems to be a recurring phenomenon all the more for its unpredictability. We can assuage ourselves that it won't happen here, but we really do not know where the next here will be. As long as students are abused by their peers, witness, or are themselves abused at home, or think there is nowhere to turn, and can of course easily get a gun, more tragedies will occur. That's not an assumption, that's a scientific and data corroborated fact. To the lives that have been lost, may you rest in peace. To those of us who are left here, we need to do better. Hey everyone, we've released quite a few social commentary episodes lately, you may have noticed, but we will return with one of our team's deep dive investigations next week. This one is 8 months in the making, where we expose some true evil. Stick with us for that one, and thanks for listening.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to our show tonight. Be sure to leave us a 5-star review on your chosen podcast platform and subscribe to our newsletter over at deadsoulsocialclub.com. Our shows aren't sponsored by any company, media, or corporation, so any support you can give us goes a long way in supporting the work that we do. Visit deadsoulsocialclub.com for more information on how you can help us and support our broadcasts. Until next time, everyone, stay safe and sleep tight. And remember, stand firm as you enter the darkest night.